welcome to Speak a Dogcast. My name is David Farb, Animal Behavior Specialist, and I am broadcasting from WOUF Woof Studios in beautiful Palm City, Florida. Thank you so much for joining me again today. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes, they usually come out every Wednesday. But last Wednesday, we skipped an episode, and I do apologize for that. Look, my wife's a CPA. She had a tax season last week. We were getting out of town on vacation, trying to leave. And like getting everything together with the animals and my wife, and it gets a little crazy at the end of tax season. And it's no excuse, but I do apologize. We skipped training tip Tuesday. It was just not a good week trying to get out. I guess it was 2 weeks ago now. You lose track of time at the end of tax season and then going on vacation. So I had a wonderful vacation. Some of you might have seen my Instagram post. Don't forget to subscribe to my Instagram channel at Speak a Dogcast and join me there every Tuesday for Training Tip Tuesday, bringing you guys different training tips every Tuesday. But I had a wonderful vacation in the Caribbean. It was amazing. What a wonderful cruise, and definitely needed. My wife needed it, I think, way more than I did. So luckily she got relaxed, caught up on some sleep, relaxed in the sun. It was great. So yeah, back to the podcast. If the visual thing is more your thing, be sure you subscribe to my YouTube channel at Speak a Dogcast. And if you would like to support the show even further, I would appreciate it. You can become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/speakadogcast. If you love the show, if you love what you're hearing, scroll on down, give me that 5-star rating. I would really appreciate it. Now on today's show, we have how to fix pulling on the leash. A pretty simple fix for the most part. We're going to have a pretty simple exercise for you guys to work on. We're going to talk about that and more, utilizing the right tools, all kinds of great stuff, getting your dog to stop pulling. Yes. Then we have rescuing a friend, an awesome segment on rescuing dogs, things you should know ahead of time, maybe, and just good stuff. So check it out. Then we have the history of animal mascots 101, followed by the listener Q&A. And if you have any questions for the listener Q&A, dog training, animal training, anything animal dog related, be sure you send it my way. You can email me questions@speakadogcast.com or just message me on social media. Yes, your question could get featured on the show. Now, before we get going with today's show, got to give you that trivia question. Today's question is going to be, in the comic strip Garfield, what breed of dog is Odie? Yes, in the comic strip Garfield, what breed of dog is Odie? I will give you the answer to that question somewhere in today's show, so be sure you stick around. Sit, stay, and enjoy the podcast. Next on Speak a Dogcast, how to fix pulling on the leash. Yes, it is probably one of the most common issues out there that people deal with. And, you know, it's funny, I think it may even be more of an issue than it's ever been. And what I'm trying to get at here is that, quite frankly, the biggest issue with pulling and leash pulling is that people are using the wrong tools. Yes, you can solve majority of your issues by just changing up the tools they're using. There's a little asterisk on that, though. The asterisk is knowing how to use that tool, right? Like, this is why magical fixes don't exist when it comes to the magical harness or the magical gentle leader or the magical this or that. And the fact remains that it doesn't matter what tool you're using, right? Like, if you're not using the tool properly, you may not get the best results. And there are just some tools that are the incorrect tool. So it doesn't matter how good you use that tool, how well you utilize that tool, it's just not going to get you the results you're looking for. And that's because it's the wrong tool. So this definitely, the conversation has to start with use the right tools, guys. I'm telling you, I don't know why people make their lives so much more difficult by wanting to utilizing the wrong tools for the wrong job. Okay. So when it comes to pulling on a leash, we have to analyze, well, let's see, what tools are we using in that moment? We're using a leash and we're using a restraint mechanism, whether that be a collar, harness, whatever. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to say is get rid of the harnesses. Harnesses, my goodness. What a terrible, terrible, terrible training tool. Guys, look, harnesses were designed to make dogs pull, quite bluntly. That's what it is. If I needed a dog to pull a sled, right? Like, I'm running the Iditarod, you're not. But let's say I am, and I need this dog to pull. The last thing I want to put on them is a collar, right? Because they're going to choke themselves out trying to pull this sled, and it's not going to work well. What did I just say? Wrong tool for the job. So this is where the invention of a harness came in, is it utilizes the dog's body weight, their muscle, everything from the chest and the power of the dog, and doesn't do anything to the neck. Makes sense, because that's what they're trying to accomplish. However, in a normal, average, everyday pet setting where you have a dog in your home, it's your pet, right? That kind of environment, you're not running an Iditarod. You're not doing anything. Honestly, you're not. You're not doing anything that would require the use of a harness. Unless you're pulling a kid in a wagon, which I don't really recommend doing. okay, I do not recommend doing that. I think it's a bad idea. That's just me. So, get rid of the harnesses, guys. If you're not doing something that requires the need of that tool, why are you using that tool? It's that simple. Harnesses were designed to make a dog pull. What are we trying not have happen? Our dog's pulling. So let's not use the tool that in fact encourages that behavior. They feel the restraint against their chest, guys, and dogs are predators, and predators naturally want to fight against restraint. This is a very basic instinctual mechanism built into a predator. I feel restraint, I pull. This is why harnesses are bad. So what is the go-to tool? There are a few of them, but I have a favorite that I use majority of the time for a majority of my clients, a majority of you guys out there. This is going to be the tool that's going to work best for you. It's called a martingale collar. M-A-R-T-I-N-G-A-L-E. Martingale collar, wonderful collar. It's the best of both worlds, guys. I find it just to be awesome. Is that to say we don't want to go up to maybe a choker or a, prong collar? Well, we'll get to that in a second. But we want to start with the martingale collar, and I'm going to explain it in detail of why. I don't want you to just slap the martingale collar on and go, David told me to do this. No, I want you to know why you need to do this, because what did I say at the beginning? You can have the right tool on your animal, but if you're not utilizing it properly, if you don't have the knowledge of how to use it correctly, you are not going to get the results you're looking for. It's all about education, people. So martingale collars, basically it is 2/3 a nylon collar and 1/3 chain collar. And the idea is that when we constrict the chain, or excuse me, when we pull on the chain, it's going to constrict the nylon part of the collar. And what we are trying to accomplish with this type of correction, a constricting correction, is we're attempting to tap into the instinct of a dog and correct them how they naturally correct each other, which is that nip to the neck. Notice what I'm saying here. This is important. Nip. I'm not saying grab and bite and hold. I'm not saying playtime. No, I'm saying like mama dog's coming into puppy and nipping and correcting. A dog is getting annoyed with another dog and he's going, hey, leave me alone, little nip. Nip. Notice the key word there. The whole point of these constraint collars, these restricting collars, is to mimic that natural nip correction. So when we put it into the form of a collar, what it's going to turn into is a pop correction. That's what we call it, a pop correction. Not a pull correction, not a yank correction, but instead a pop. The whole concept is for these collars to provide that constraint mechanism and then immediately release. It's very important you understand this, guys, because you're going to have a hard time fixing pulling on the leash if you don't understand this basic concept. Not only understand it, but apply it. I battle with clients. This is something that's very common. I battle when we first start on understanding and utilizing corrections. People are so hesitant to want to use these collars correctly. And I go, guys, look, the more you pull on the collar and not pop, the worse off time your dog is going to have. The more quote unquote damage you could potentially do, even though I've never seen anybody do damage with these collars. That's what makes them so wonderful. And again, dogs' necks are built to sustain these type of pop nip corrections. It's literally how they are biologically built. Not my decision. This was, you know, nature. It wasn't me. Okay. So we're trying to mimic nature. So pop corrections are what we need to utilize. And I can't stress it enough, guys. You have to utilize that pop correction. You actually have to correct your dog to make a correction. You can't just like, pull. What's the definition of corrections? What's the definition of aversive, punishment, corrections? Three words, the same thing. They're the same word. Corrections, punishment, aversives. What's the definition? Anything an animal works to avoid. Aversive, avoid. Anything an animal works to avoid. So if you're not giving a collar correction that they work to avoid, then we're never going to decrease that undesired behavior of pulling. Ah. There's the whole concept come together, guys. It's very simplistic because people often say, well, I correct them. I tell them no, but it doesn't work. This is what I love about the science, guys. If you understand the science, you'll understand why it's not working. Okay? I mean, really, I can't put it any more plainly than that. If you don't want to understand and learn the science, if you do not want to understand this information, you're not going to be very good at applying it. It's just that simple. Isn't that how anything works in life, right? Like, Have to have an understanding, people. Okay, so we now understand the definition of corrections. We understand why the collar is designed the way it is and why we need to utilize it with pop corrections and not pull corrections because, right, it's natural, it's instinctual, they understand. Look, the other side of it, we could take it a little one step further before we move on. I can take it one step further and I can say that we're using the collars in a natural way because that's the way dogs correct each other. But I could also say we're using it in a natural way because this is the rules of psychology and this is how this stuff is built, right? The whole concept of why we want a pop correction is because I want to be able to utilize a correction and then allow the dog to go, wait, why did that correction just happen? What do I do to get that correction to stop? Or how is that correction going to happen again? There is some level of analysis, more basic than that, going on inside a dog's brain. And so that's what happens. Now, if I just pull and yank and the tension's constantly there and it's just all over the place and the dog is just getting frustrated, I'm not conveying very black and white information to my dog, am I? It's just turning into frustration and then, choking. Maybe you guys know what I'm talking about. You've seen frustrated dogs out there that are just flailing and acting like lunatics. Because the collar and the tension is sticking around so much and making them feel like they need to practice the fight mechanism, right? So that's why our corrections need to be in and out. It gives our animal, our dog, an opportunity to understand, right? Consequence versus reward versus just constant consequence, and then it just doesn't even make sense to them. So by applying and removing, or using pop corrections, it allows our dog to understand consequence reward. The other side of it is if I keep pulling and keep yanking, it's just going to create frustration and confusion, and we're never going to get anywhere. So it has to do with the instinctual basic science side of it as much as it is on how a dog is hardwired. It all kind of goes together, right? So now, before we move on how we actually utilize this and put this into play, let's make sure we have one more tool on us. Treat pouch. Very, very important, guys. Treats in a treat pouch. They're kind of one in the right. It's two tools, but it's one in the same because your treat pouch is no good if there's no treats in it. So it's a treat and a treat. Treats and a treat pouch. And you have to make sure you have it, okay? All right, and I hadn't mentioned the leash yet, but guys, leashes, they should be 6 feet, they should be nylon or leather. No stretchy material, no runaway leashes, no. Bad, bad, bad. Get rid of that crap. Bad training tools. My goodness. I'd say it over and over and over, and hopefully I move a couple pebbles and get people to throw these bad training tools away. I wish I could scream it from bigger rooftops, maybe someday, that y'all need to stop using these really bad tools. It's just, it blows my mind. Regular 6 foot nylon leash. Guys, we used ropes and hemp and things like that for thousands of years with animals. We never had stretchy materials or this, oh, it gives a little bit so it makes your dog feel happier or any BS gimmicky crap. I can't believe people can't see that. For thousands of years, we didn't have any of this gimmicky BS and we did just fine training dogs. Now, all of a sudden, it's the 21st century and oh, I have to have all these tools and this special harness and this no pull this and this stretchy leash that and the runaway leash to give them more freedom and that's what I think of that. Okay, so the 12-year-old in me comes out when I start hearing people like that. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to hear that. All right, so how do we fix this? Let's put it into play. We're walking down the street and all of a sudden my dog starts pulling, even if it's just for no reason. We're going to utilize a pop correction here, guys. We're going to maybe even let them get a foot or two out in front of us, and we're going to utilize a good pop correction, and simultaneously while we make this pop correction, we're going to be turning and going the opposite direction. Yeah. Now look, you need to understand the size of your dog relative to the correction you're making. I always want to say you need to pretty much match your correction to whatever the level of behavior your dog is doing and to whatever the level of the size of your dog is. If you have a little 6-pound chihuahua that's pulling on the leash, the amount of correction you're going to need to do is equivalent of literally flicking your fingers, okay? Versus if I have a 100-pound golden retriever, right? They're notorious for being pullers because they're very driven dogs, and people don't want to control that drive. I don't know why. I think that's very irresponsible of a retriever owner to not want to control that instinct and drive. Silly. We'll have to take our corrections up a notch here. This is where we also start to talk about a collar correction, okay? So if we're utilizing this pop correction, let's say we do have the 100-pound golden retriever. Let's say we're walking down the street and let's say the dog starts pulling. I'm going to immediately stop, do a 180, turn the other way, and give a nice sharp pop correction. Now, key to this correction here, the leash actually needs to be loose before you make a correction, guys. If the leash is already tight, you're just going to be pulling them. You see what I'm saying? The collar's already going to be tight. There's no chance to make a pop correction. So it's important that we try to almost, look, I'll cheat. I'll have the dog next to me. They'll start pulling and I'll almost I let the leash go. I give them slack and let them get a foot or two in front of me so the leash can be loose so I can utilize a sharp pop correction. Important detail. I'm going to do a 180 and utilize a pop correction with a nice loose leash first, making that pop, going right back to loose and walk in the other direction. Your dog's going to notice, trust me, and they're going to look up at you. Okay? Now, my rule of thumb on the walk is anytime I get eye contact from my dog, I want to tell him good boy, good girl. When we're starting out, we can eventually phase that out. But to start with, anytime I get focus from my dog on the walk, whether I ask for it or not, I need to reinforce it. Because the whole thing is you can eliminate pulling, yes, with an aversive, yes, with punishments. But on top of that, I need to show them the other side of the coin of increasing the desired behavior of staying with me, not pulling, and focusing and paying attention. To me, focus is more important than anything else on the walk. We can stop pulling if we have focus. I can stop pulling even if I don't have focus. But the point is, if I can hit it from both angles, that's just it. If I can make that correction when they're not paying attention and then reinforce it when they are, you are giving that dog twice as much information to work with, and they're going to learn twice as fast. So we need to make that correction to tell them what we don't like. We then need to remove the tension to tell them what we do like, right? Because they usually instantly stop pulling if you make a good correction. So I don't want to keep correcting like we talked about earlier. And then once I remove that correction, a lot of times the dog's just going to look straight up at you. Just watch. It'll happen. It's amazing if you utilize these corrections correctly. This is how we stop pulling on a leash. I reward the behavior once they're looking at me, and we keep walking. And guess what? In about 5 or 10 seconds, your dog's going to start pulling again. No big deal. Same thing. 180 turn, pop correction, we go the other way. They stop pulling, we release the tension, they look up at me, we reinforce it. This is how we stop pulling. Now, this is the beginning, right? This is probably without a distraction. This is just the dog going. They're in go mode, and they're pulling. Distractions are a different monster, but we have to start by walking, like, right? We're not going to be able to run a marathon before we know how to put one foot in front of the other. And that's what this is. This is teaching your dog some very basic things. Look, let's step outside of it and look at it, right? What we're seeing is when a dog pulls, we may have learned how to make a correction. We're redirecting it. We go the other way. We're reinforcing. Okay, so that's kind of like what it looks like. But what's actually happening is we're teaching your dog, number one, there is a boundary to this walk. This is not a free-for-all. There is a line. There is a physicality, a physical line to this walk. There is a boundary that if you pull past it, there is a consequence for it. Now, another thing with this dog we're teaching in this moment is not only is there a boundary, but if you stay within the boundary, the consequence disappears. It gets even better. If you keep staying within the boundary and you focus up at the person, oh my gosh, you get treats and reward and praise and pets. So what we're teaching your dog is there's a boundary. They know how to stay within it. And not only that, if they stay within this boundary, they get rewarded for it. That is a ton of information by using what? The correct tools, knowing how to utilize them, right? And then one simple little, oh my goodness, what is the simple word I'm looking for right now? Exercise. Can't remember the word exercise, apparently. One little exercise of corrections and redirections and reinforcement. We're doing one turn, one simple turn. Now, is this the end all be all necessarily to pulling fixing? Not entirely, but I think you'll be shocked by doing this. Some of you guys, this will be the end all be all for you. This is all you're going to have to do to fix a dog pulling, especially if you have a young puppy and they haven't been practicing this a long time. Go try this out. Tell me how it goes. I want to hear. I know how it's going to go if you utilize it correctly. The right tools, the right knowledge, the right implementation of these tools and knowledge, and then one simple exercise, such as doing a 180 paired with a pop correction. Then we reinforce when they stop pulling. It's that simple, ladies and gentlemen. It's that simple, boys and girls. But what does it take? It takes consistency, repetition, training, effort on your part. That's what it takes to train your dogs. That's what it takes to stop pulling. So definitely implement this. Let me know how it goes. Send me a message online, email me, whatever you'd like. I'd love to hear how this went for you guys and how it's going with your dog. So give this a try. Let me know how it goes, and you can stop your dog from pulling in no time. Are you tired of your dog barking all the time? Or maybe you want them to stop jumping on people when they come over. Or does your dog take you for a walk instead of the other way around? Well, we can help. At the Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, we are committed to improving the relationships and lives people have with their pets. No matter what behavioral issue you are experiencing, from an unruly puppy to more severe issues, we can help. Our virtual training programs are catered to you and your pet and create a training plan that gets results. For more information, you can check out our website at www.thenatureoftraining.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Speak a Dogcast. With the ability to connect, teach, and train with pet owners around the world, together we can make a better home for our furry friends. The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, helping you achieve success with your pet. Next on Speak a Dogcast, rescuing a friend. It's been a little while since I've done a segment on rescue dogs, rescuing a dog. We're going to talk a little bit about that, as well as one of my dogs, Captain Nemo. Yes, Nemo. You know, look, Nemo's not your average rescue dog. And you know what I mean by that is, look, I've got four dogs now. All four of them are rescues. And I've rescued quite a few dogs over the years now. Not quite a few, but a few, you know. And statistically speaking, Nemo is not an average dog when it comes to rescue dogs. And what I mean by that is Nemo came with a lot of baggage. Nemo was a traumatized dog. And, you know, we don't know what happened to him. The rescue didn't know what happened to him. But, man, there's just kind of no other way to say it. He was one screwed up little puppy. Wasn't a little puppy. One screwed up puppy. And, you know, I'm grateful that we had the opportunity to help Nemo out and give him a home and give him the patience, time, training that he needed. And he also pushed our boundaries of comfort, of training, of everything over the time we've had him. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't regret getting Nemo. I don't. And he's an amazing dog now. He's incredible now. And the end result is really cool. Really, really cool. And we'll talk more about that too. But when we talk about rescuing dogs, I think there is sort of this fear that people have of, are they going to end up with a Captain Nemo? Now, the rescue that we got Nemo from, Big Dog Ranch and Rescue, Big Dog, and they have little dogs too. They're down in West Palm. What a phenomenal facility, as I've said before. It is like the Disney World of dog rescues. If I was a dog, that's where I want to end up. The facilities are beautiful. They're amazing. They're incredible, top notch. They have not only volunteers, but paid staff. They have trainers on staff. They do a program for service dogs for veterans. What an amazing place. I can't speak highly enough of them. Any of you guys out there, maybe you're looking to donate somewhere this year, Big Dog Ranch is a great option. They're phenomenal. I can't say enough great things about the work that they do. And they take their money and they spend it wisely. They spend it on the dogs. And it's awesome. All right. Enough bragging on them. So, you know, the thing is, though, they made us very aware. They made us very aware that Nemo had been returned multiple times. Nemo had issues. They also knew what I did for a living. They definitely looked up my website, researched me a little bit. And that's what I love. They did a little bit of due diligence. They're not just handing this dog over to anybody. And they knew that, hopefully, I'm sure in their eyes, hopefully, because they didn't know me very well, that we'd be a good fit for him and that we could deal with his issues. And so that's the thing is, luckily, a lot of these rescues, and not all of them, and this is the, you know, look, I'm a realist, guys. I'm a realist at the end of the day. A lot of these rescues are not going to be 100% honest with you about these dogs, their situations, their behaviors. And the other side of it is a lot of these rescues may not even be aware of the issues because they may not come out until the dog is removed and put into a home environment. So I get the anxiety over rescuing dogs. But however, here's the good news. You ready for it? Here's the wonderful news. Those stories, those dogs, that's such a minor statistic, such a minor percentage of the dogs adopted out. The vast majority of dogs adopted out have wonderful stories, have wonderful homes, have happy families, happy dogs. It's just a great happy ending for everybody. And that's what I'm here to tell you. If you're thinking about rescuing a dog, look, there's things you need to do, and we're going to talk about the best way to set you up for success. But I don't want you to be scared. That's what I'm trying to say. Don't be scared. We have had so many amazing rescues over the years now, and I wouldn't trade it for a damn thing. They're incredible. And here's the other thing with a mixed breed. Let's start it off. Let's go. Here's one huge positive about rescuing. David, I don't know what mixed breed I'm getting. Genetically, that dog is going to be more diverse and theoretically healthier. Yeah, You heard me right. Look, my half lab, half Great Dane, Penny Lane, I had, she lived to be 12 and a half. 12 and a half. Any of you hearing that? Great Danes are only supposed to live to be 7 to 9. You know, even labs are technically 10 to 12, and a lot of them don't even hit that 12-year mark. And Penny lived to be 12 and a half years old. Of course, I chalk that up to a lot of love we gave her over the years. We gave her a lot of exercise. We kept her healthy, regular vet visits and such. But I truly believe it's genetic diversity. It's that genetic, you know, diversity that helps make her healthier, because the harsh reality is purebred dogs have been inbred. Colby Jack was another one of mine. He was not a rescue dog. He was a golden retriever. And look, this is when I was younger. I didn't know as much as I know now. And the breeder we got him from was probably not the most responsible breeder. And Colby had just a slew of health issues over the course of his entire life, from skin issues to ear issues to thyroid problems to bad shoulder when he was a puppy. We had to have surgery before, like right when he was about a year old. I mean, countless. And you know what Penny had? 2 ACL surgeries. That's it. I kid you not. Penny had 2 ACL surgeries, which makes sense. She's a big dog. She's half Great Dane. Makes sense for an ACL surgery. But otherwise, that dog was damn healthy. Okay? So people hesitating, going, oh, I want the purebred this, the purebred that. Look, don't get me wrong. There are breeders out there that are phenomenal. But the reality is the majority of breeders are not phenomenal. The majority of breeders are there to make a buck. The majority of breeders are there to breed because, oh, the dog is cute. Not because they're trying to be responsible and genetically do the right thing by you know, for the dogs, for the people, for everybody. So this is the harsh reality, that purebreds are not necessarily the best choice from a health standpoint. You want to spend less at the vet? Mutt might be the way to go, guys. A rescue dog might be the way to go. You might discover they cost you less over the lifetime of your purebred to your left, okay, that you spent $4,000 on. How many doodles out there that are getting older, all of a sudden having cancer issues, or having growths, or having all these problems because these dogs are inbred and not bred properly? And why the bred with Goldens? Goldens are known for their health issues. Golden Doodles, right? Lab, same thing. Guys, like, come on. It doesn't take a genius to figure this stuff out. Now, you are breeding a Golden in a lab. Aha, genetic diversity. I can hear the arguments. Yeah, but if you're purposefully breeding these dogs in breeding, it still doesn't solve the problem. You see what I'm saying? Okay, so getting back to it, rescue dogs. That's the first thing. You could actually have a healthier dog. Yeah. All right, now let's run through a checklist of things to be aware of. Breeds. Now, I hear it, I get it, and this is one of those where I go, look, I don't have the answer for this one all the way. I'm just being, again, realist, honesty time. What happens when you get a mixed breed mixed with breeds that are not good for you, and you don't know it because you got him at 10 weeks old? Hi, my name is David. I adopted a dog named Riker. He's right back here, if you can see him in the video. He's adorable. And he was labeled a lab hound mix, and he has 0 lab and 0 hound in him, and he has a ton of farm dog. Lucky for me, I live on acreage. Lucky for me, I happen to train dogs for a living. Lucky for me, I can keep him active and happy. Look, he has collie, he has pit bull, he has boxer, he has, oh my goodness, Australian cattle dog, I'm like blanking on a bunch of them. Do you hear the breeds I'm saying? Active breeds. He is the sweetest, happiest, amazing dog. I can't even put into words how amazing Riker is. But guys, if I couldn't commit to walking him daily, exercising him daily, all these things that he needs from his breed point standpoint might not be a good fit. And this is where I go, I don't have the answer for this. I don't, because short of literally genetically testing every single dog that comes into a rescue, which financially is just completely infeasible, there's no way to know for sure. So you just have to play the game. The thing is, though, look, lab hound mix, right? It's not far off from a farm dog. I mean, well, hounds are farm dogs. You see what I'm saying? So most people will go, oh, he's a lab hound. He's got lab. He's fine. Really? Labs need a ton of exercise. Hounds need a ton of exercise. That's my point. Look at the mixed breeds of what they're labeled as. And I get labels can be misleading and people can't be perfect. And there's no way to know without genetic testing. But try to match a breed that's going to be best for you. There are so many breed-specific rescues out there. Golden Retriever Rescue of South Florida. That's the golden one that comes to my brain because they're down a little further south of me, a bit further south of me. But Goldens only, guys. Yeah, they get a lot of retriever mixes and things like that too. So if you're also looking for a mutt, boom, check them out. if you're partial to retrievers. There's small dog rescues, big dog rescues. There's Doberman rescues. There's German Shepherd rescues. I mean, there's literally no excuse anymore to not rescue a dog, guys, especially now post-COVID with so many people returning dogs back to rescues. Just please, I beg you, go look at the rescues, go help them out, and go adopt a dog. With that said, I need you to be patient. I'm begging you guys. I'm asking you guys. It doesn't matter the rescue dog you get. You've got to be patient with them. I just read something recently. I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think I talked about it where I saw an article on Facebook, or not an article. Someone's one of the rescues posted that a dog had been returned because he, quote, got the zoomies. I really wanted to call the rescue and go, can you give me the number of these people so I can call them and go, did you try walking the dog or exercising the dog? Dog's telling you they're under exercise. You just rescued them. They've been cooped up in a rescue. They get home. They're excited. They love this new place. They're getting this extra energy pent up out in a way that maybe isn't the healthiest. And you go, oh, take them back. What? This was local. And I know this happens every damn day. And it disgusts me. Guys, if you are not ready to be patient with your dog, help your dog, train your dog, help them transition from a life of God only knows where they were to the comfort of your home, then do us all a favor and just don't get a dog. Sorry. There it is. Okay. Now, you know what? I'm not sorry. I'm not, because don't do it. Don't be irresponsible. Do the right thing. So there it is, guys. You know, that's my biggest thing when it comes to rescuing dogs, that while, yes, the majority of them are not going to have too many issues, the reality is you have to be patient. I don't know if you all even want to hear the amount of time it took for, in my professional opinion, Nemo to go from the mangled, crazy, traumatized mess he was to the stable dog that I have in my home right now, who's laying on the front porch asleep on the couch out there while I'm recording. Not even kidding. It's even hard for me to imagine that this day could have come. Well over a year, guys. Year and a half, at least. I would say a year and 8 months to get where we finally started to be able to even trust him, where he trusted us. This was one screwed up puppy. This was the extreme case. This was the far, far extreme of a traumatized dog, just under, you know, dogs being used for like potentially dog fighting or something really horrible. Severe, you know. And again, those of you that don't know, Nemo, when we adopted him, still does. I mean, it is what it is. It's the way it's healed. His tail is completely kinked in a right angle. At some point, his tail must have gotten crushed in something. Again, we don't know. And and whoever had him in their care did not give him care, did not take him to the vet. The tail healed improperly, and now it's healed, thank goodness, in a way that does no pain, doesn't hurt him. So that's the awesome news. He's totally 100% fine. It's just healed at a right angle. However, from the point of traumatization of whatever happened to healing, and then to get into the rescue, and then he was returned like 3 times, and then to us, that's a lot. It's a lot to ask of a dog, isn't it? And so we were so patient with him. So patient with this dog. It pushed my boundaries of my patience. I'm not going to lie. It was tough, like, to watch this dog. He was aggressive at times. There's no sugarcoating it. It was not a pretty situation in our household for a long time until we exercised and trained and worked and worked and worked. And we finally got him over this. And now he's to the point that he's chill. He's relaxed. I don't even need to crate him anymore when we leave. He's one of my best walkers now. He's phenomenal. And all of those things, he was the exact opposite when we got him. So be patient. Show patience, show kindness to your dogs. And at the same time, show rules and boundaries, because that was the thing. Nemo had never had rules and boundaries in his life. And so he was nothing but this bottle of chaos. And finally, showing him through rules, boundaries, and kindness, we've gotten him there. But man, does it take time and patience sometimes. Look, I'm trying to be truthful and honest. If you come across a dog like that, do yourself a favor and don't let your heart get the best of you. I mean this with love for both you and the dog. Do not let your heart get the best of you. if you are not ready to take on something like that, where it's going to append, just totally screw up your life. There's no other way to put it. It's going to screw up your plans at some point. You're going to be late to a lot of things. You're going to have to deal with behavioral stuff on a daily basis. If you're not ready to take that on, don't. Don't. And again, with that said, the other side of the coin, let's end on a happy note. The vast majority of dog rescues are not the situation. And that's also the other side I really want to show you guys today. There are both sides of the coin when it comes to rescuing dogs. And luckily for everyone, the vast majority of rescues are happy endings, are just wonderful for everybody. So I implore you, for all these reasons, go check out a rescue dog. It might be a good fit for you. It might be an even better fit for the dog. The answer to today's trivia question: in the comic strip Garfield, what breed of dog is Odie? He's a dachshund. Yes, surprisingly, yes, he's a dachshund. Odie's appearance actually has changed over the years, and one of the changes happened way back in the late 70s to make Odie appear a little less like Snoopy and try to make that differentiation. So he might not always reflect that in the way he's drawn or the coloration. Odie is meant to be a dachshund. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the History of Animal Mascots 101. Today, we'll be talking about the University of Missouri. Now, the University of Missouri, also known as Mizzou, they were the first public university founded west of the Mississippi River and founded in 1839. Now, Mizzou's mascot is the tiger. Yes, now the origins of the tiger being used as a mascot for the school trace back all the way to the 1890s. However, the history of the tiger in the actual state of Missouri, they go back even further. Now, around the 1850s, guerrilla bands would show up in the Midwest to plunder and raid small towns. So in the town of Columbia, the residents decided to band together and create their own organization as a temporary home guard to protect their town. Now, they built a blockhouse and fortified the old courthouse in the center of town. The company came to be called the Missouri Tigers. Yes, by 1854, it had seemed that the town's preparedness had worked, as they were never attacked. But then it was rumored that a guerrilla band led by the notorious Bill Anderson intended to sack the entire town. However, the reputation of the town's Tigers seemed to deter Anderson's gang around Columbia. Now, not long after Missouri's first football team was founded in 1890, and the athletic committee adopted the nickname the Tiger in official recognition of those Civil War defenders. Now, the mascot was simply known as the Tiger for many years, and it was not until 1984 that he earned the name Truman the Tiger. Yes, the Mizzou cheerleaders held a naming contest that was held over the course of a few weeks. The winner, Truman, was named after Missouri-born President of the United States, Harry S. Truman, although Harry S. Truman actually never earned any college degree. Interesting trivia fact here, Truman is the only president since William McKinley who did not earn a college degree. Now, Truman has become a beloved mascot, making many appearances on behalf of the school, and earned Best Mascot in the Nation in national competition in 2004, and then again in 2014. On Speak a Dogcast, it's the listener Q&A. The first question today comes from Mary from Toledo, Ohio. Mary asks, I rescued a dog recently and she definitely has some fear issues. One of the biggest issues is that she will pee anytime someone looks at her. How do I begin to stop this? Mary, thank you for the question and thank you for rescuing a dog. As we talked about today on the show, it's good timing again there. Look, this is a tough thing, Mary. I have a Chihuahua, Coco. And she's actually, is she back there? She's somewhere. Oh, she can't see her. She's behind the microphone right now. But she's back there behind me, laying with her buddy Riker. And Coco was a rescue, and Coco came to us with, severe fear issues. Like, I can totally relate. We couldn't crate her. She'd always pee and poop inside her crate. She was very scared of especially bigger men, me, including myself. She was terrified of me at first. Anytime I bent down to pet her, cower and pee. I hear ya. Tough problem. Look, the first thing, and this may be something you hadn't considered, is... Especially because she's a Chihuahua, you didn't say she's a Chihuahua. I'm sorry. I'm assuming it's a small dog. Usually they tend to be smaller when they pee like this and cower. But either way, doesn't really matter. up the amount of exercise. That's the first thing I need you to do. Up the amount of exercise you're giving your dog and giving her. It really can help curb some of that anxiety and some of that fear. Is it going to solve your problems? No, that's just the first step, okay? Try to start with exercise and walks, maybe if you can, not around a ton of people. Try to get her out into public places, different places. Don't make it the same place over and over and over. Dogs that tend to have anxiety and fear issues can become too reliant on too much routine, and it actually can increase the amount of anxiety issues you're having. So I do recommend taking a dog like this to walks in different locations, but try to start with locations that tend to be more isolated where there aren't a ton of people around. Question for you, is your dog okay with other dogs? Because if she's cool with other dogs, try to find, if you have any friends that have like really well-behaved, really stable-minded, chill dogs, try to get her around those dogs. She can actually learn from their confidence and their calmness, and it can have a really good effect. Okay, so that's something to consider as well. Third thing here, treats, 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 food, food, food. You've got to try to get her food motivated if she's not already. And we've got to, at some point, get strangers and people she's fearful of to be giving her that food. It's going to start with you, right, Mary? I need you to start giving her treats like it's a normal thing. Don't give her too many, right? If it's a small dog, you can break these treats up into tiny little pieces, just enough so she knows she's getting them. If she's not taking them, then you got to try a couple times every day. Just a little, you know, random. Don't make it a big deal. Don't go, oh, it's okay, blah, blah. None of that. Just try to hand her a treat. Don't say a word to her. Try to get her to take it. Hold it there for 5-10 seconds. If she doesn't take it away. Try again in another minute or two. Okay. If she's already taken them from you, great. Other people, this is how we're going to start it. Now, like I said, first step is getting exercise increased and getting her out into public a little bit without people interacting with her. Once we accomplish all the first few steps, then we're going to bring somebody new into the picture. Again, I want you to be out in a neutral environment, somewhere outside your house. I don't want you to be home when you do this. Whether it's a friend of yours or a stranger, doesn't matter as much as long as they listen to what you're asking of them. And what you are going to ask of this stranger or this person is that they simply come in sideways towards your dog. They're not going to face them head on and come at them. They're just going to slowly scooch over sideways without making any eye contact with her, without looking at her. Quite frankly, she doesn't even really exist. They're going to have a treat in their hand, and they're just going to slowly reach out once they get close enough with open palm, treat laying in the palm, and offer that treat to her. Same thing, 5-10 seconds. If she doesn't really want it, maybe a little longer for them because they're new, maybe like 20-30 seconds. Okay, if she doesn't want it, pull it away. No big deal. Try it again in a few minutes. The whole thing we're trying to make her understand is these people, these new strangers, are not a threat. We don't want her coming face on because that could be taken as a threat. That could be intimidating. Same thing with the eye contact. Your dog might interpret that as intimidating, as a threat, as a challenge. So instead, we need to come in sideways and very passively. Then hopefully she can start taking treats and we can slowly start associating food with people she's fearful of, okay? There's going to be accidents with this. I can guarantee it. Okay, that's another reason maybe take her outside to a neutral environment too, is because so you don't have to clean up the accident inside. But take this slowly. Take this slowly, Mary. There's no rush. This could take you a couple months to conquer. I mean, seriously, there's no rush on it. But the key is to not baby her, not coddle her, okay? No baby voices, none of that stuff. And just pretend like it's not even a big deal. Like, just don't even care. That's what it needs to be, okay? All right, try that out. See if that helps and let me know how it goes. Next question. This comes from DeAndre from Dallas, Texas. DeAndre says, I am a dog person. I love dogs. I have a dog myself. I have a Minpin, and I pride myself on how much time and effort I have put into her training. Nice. Good for you, DeAndre. Heck yeah. Should be proud of yourself. I have a friend, and I don't like going over to her house because her dog jumps all over me and is out of control. How can I nicely say to my friend that she needs to train her dog? DeAndre, you know, I have the luxury that I do this for a living, so people tend to listen to me better when I talk. Not if they're related to me. Family doesn't like listening to my training advice, but my friends do, and that's okay. How do you do it nicely? What a question. What a question. You can't, right? Like, you can't, because the problem is your friend doesn't, like, clearly, like, this is the issue here, right? First of all, DeAndre, you're correct and you're awesome. Thank you for training your dog. Thank you for priding yourself in training your dog. I love it. Especially Minpin. Like, people look at them as like little yappy, confident, meh. And it's like, dude, Minpins are awesome. Like, stop. It's bad ownership. They're freaking phenomenal dogs. All right. So I love Minpins. So That's problem number one. You are seeing it correctly. Your friend is not. Your friend doesn't even see there's an issue. They did, the dog probably wouldn't jump, or they'd at least try to correct it, right? So it sounds like your friend doesn't even see it as a problem. You can try to be passive about it and go, look, I really don't like when your dog jumps on me. Does your dog ever jump on kids? Does your dog ever jump on your mom? Isn't your mom getting older? Like, is she going to hurt your mom? Like, try to be passive and kind of ninja your way into that. Okay, tough, but it's up to you. You know, I'd like to think I can be honest to some degree with some of my friends. Some of my friends may not handle it so well. And so, yeah, then you got to kind of back them into it. But the reality is, you can't change the way somebody thinks. You know, if they're going to think their dog isn't a problem, they're going to think their dog isn't a problem. There's unfortunately not a damn thing you can do about it short of stopping going over there. So there you go. You know, there it is into itself. My suggestion is try to passively back them into it. You always have the option of, you know, oh, hey, yeah, there was this great podcast I heard about. You should check it out and send her an episode on stopping your dog from jumping or the front door, or, you know, or happen to, you know, hey, can I borrow your phone for a second? Happen to leave an episode open on her phone. So when she opens her phone up, boom, there it is. I kid. No, I don't do it. All right. Good luck to you, Deandra. I hope your friend listens to you and trains her dog. You know. Hey, if she doesn't see it as a problem, I don't know what else you can do. That'll wrap up the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening in. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can find my Instagram channel at SpeakADogCast. Join me there every Tuesday for Training Tip Tuesday. Subscribe to my YouTube channel at SpeakADogCast. And if you want to support the show even further, become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/SpeakADogCast. If you love the show, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor, scroll on down, click that 5-star rating, or leave me a review. Give me the thumbs up on YouTube. I would really appreciate it, guys. Yes, I want to thank my patrons, my pup supporter, Regula Wright, and my dog friend, Maureen Crossan. Have a wonderful week, and don't forget, get out there and walk your dog.